Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Jay's here, he's ready. I'm Tim, and I'm here, and I'm ready. Phil, however, well, I think we need to try and perk Phil up, if at all possible. He's in all worlds of pain. You know those little adverts where you have the sad kids, when this music's playing over the top and it says, only £5 a month and you can help little Tommy? Mm-hmm. I think we need an appeal for Phil. He's looking like a broken man. He is also, as of this season, a fan of Ulster, which might have something to do with it. We'll get into that shortly on the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Hands in, pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod!
So here we are. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, to or subscribing. However, and by whatever means you're listening, very much appreciate it. We're glad you're on board. Subscribe, get in touch on iTunes, Audio Boom. You can find us there as well. Egg Chasers are on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast as well. We're on Facebook, so get involved. As I mentioned, I'm Tim. We've got JB and Phil.
Good day, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
A distraught Phil. Now, let's just rewind to the start of the season. Phil, having finished playing rugby, you know, that kind of semi-professional level, for his one club, Sedgley Park, that he grew up, played mini rugby and then senior rugby up to the championship level. He then gave up and said, actually, I don't have a club to support. He chose Ulster out of all the clubs he could have chosen because the Ulster fans got on board and gave him a brilliant pitch that he couldn't turn down. Ever since then, it's been a disaster.
I wouldn't say disaster.
No, disaster.
I would say disaster, yeah.
But it's not been our best season. Not been the Ultimans' best season, particularly after last season, going undefeated in the group stages, top four in the Pro 12. And this week, going away to Toulon, the behemoths of Toulon, taking up what is an injury-ravaged Ulster side, particularly in the pack.
Playing in the worst league in professional sports.
it was tough result, tough fixture. 60 points to 22. Hopefully we'll be back
soon.
Lost
your director of rugby.
Yeah.
Renamed your stadium the Kingspan.
Bad times at the Ravenhill Kingspan. But Phil's keeping his chin up. Their European adventure is over, practically, bar one final game next week, of course. But yeah, There's so many games that have got a big bearing on it to talk about, and we're going to get into that very, very soon. Big weekend. And I love it. And just to point out, it's Sunday evening. It's currently just gone 6 p.m. as we're starting to record this. And it's Ospreys Northampton as well, currently. And what's that score there, Jay?
I think
10-6 to Northampton. I love how much rugby you get on European weekends.
Oh, it's so good.
Thursday night through to late on Sunday evening.
Do you watch a Thursday night game?
I didn't watch it, no.
Thursday night game is the only time you're likely to watch Amling Cup or whatever it's called now, European Challenge Cup or whatever it is, because you're so desperate for the weekend's rugby. Other than that, Challenge Cup plays no part in my weekend whatsoever.
But before we get into all of those games, and we have got our reaction, Phil has got a little bit of a teaser for us.
Ooh, have you?
Yes. The teaser is... Thanks for the music, Tim.
No worries.
Okay, the teaser is...
Play along, get your pen and paper handy.
In 2014...
Yeah.
There were five players who played in the Aviva Premiership, who had also won a World Cup. Name those five players.
When?
In the year 2014.
In the
calendar
year
2014.
Ha! Child's play.
Is it?
Jay always reacts like that and then normally loses.
Oh, my... No, not him.
Not him, indeed.
Can we have a little bit of time? Maybe talk about some rugby and come back to this.
Let's do that, Tim. That's a good idea.
So we will get into that very soon, but I suppose we should get into these big European games. If we can pick Phil up, patch you up after that Toulon destruction of Ulster.
It was horrible to watch. The less said about it, the better. But I was listening to BBC Radio Ulster before the game with kind of a childlike hope that we were going to actually do some good. And whoever the pundit was, the Ulster pundit on BBC Radio Ulster, he said, got asked the question, do you think they've got a chance here in Toulon? And he said, well, of course, it's a two-horse race. And, you know, if one of the Toulon players just gets red card in the first 10 minutes, anything can happen.
What about if there's two Toulon players getting red carded?
Precisely.
Maybe three?
Maybe three, and we could have actually got a respectable result.
Disaster. What was it, a disaster? You were out of contention anyway, were you not?
We were already out of contention. The good thing was we actually went there to play rugby. And we scored.
As opposed to what?
We scored four tries. Well, as opposed to just kick it in the corner and play boring rugby. Scored four tries, some of which were pretty good.
Did you give any kids a run out?
Yeah. Yes, quite a few kids. Got
water, baptism of fire.
I'm going to talk about a Northern Irish kid. Who's made the news this week. I don't know if you saw this. They had a bit of snow in Derry.
Yes.
I've not seen this. What is this?
There's an amazing lad who appeared on UTV on the Northern Irish News. I remember seeing this YouTube video and it had like a couple of thousand views. It's gone viral and been massive because it's the school kid. Now, when you hear him, he does not sound like a school kid.
It was a wintry walk to school in Park Village, but they're a hardy breed in these parts. Well, the demolishers, we had to go anyway. We hadn't much of a choice in the matter, but sure.
It's a cold journey to school this morning.
Oh, good, you wouldn't be long getting frostbutt.
What?
I don't know what frostbutt is. I don't want any part of it. It went round the world virally to the point where he had to go back on the news a couple of days later. I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday, went back on the news to talk about the fact he'd become a viral sensation. And he just sounded amazing then as well.
Oh, God, it's mad crack altogether. Imagine that, Dave. God, I thought it just went as far as the French did. But honest to God, it's even went as far as Japan and Pakistan and America overnight. Sort of realised at a young age it didn't matter what I did, I was going to get a scowling. So, I just sort of decided, well, if I'm going to get scowled either way, I just might as well have a bit of crack.
The kid's amazing. Put a smile back on Phil's face. Let's move on. Can we please talk about Bath to lose first?
Yes, we can.
Ooh. Oh, wow. We were talking nearly 2 tons of forwards on the pitch.
Yeah.
It was incredible to watch.
There are literally some bridges in Manchester where those two packs wouldn't be allowed on at the same time.
There are, yeah.
Yeah, there are actually bridges which can't support that weight.
Incredible.
Now, I've said this for a long time.
Oh, I've just got another. I've just thought. Yes! Sorry, the quiz question. I've just remembered one.
God damn. We need to get this quiz done before Tim remembers some more.
Yeah.
Now, I've been saying this for a long time, as I've said a lot of things for a long time, but this is one of my pets. What do you call it?
Pet peeves?
No, not pet peeve at all. Pet projects.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is, everyone needs a massive back row.
Bath, Wasps.
Yeah. Bath looked magnificent.
Yeah.
And without Burgess. Because like I've been saying, it's so far been a waste of time. You take out Burgess and all of a sudden it's this free-flowing, electric rugby because they're not having to babysit some 6'4" monster.
Mm.
Watching Ford, Eastman and Joseph play in that kind of fluid open rugby like they were doing today,
I was going to say, we shouldn't just get hung up on the forwards because I think the real standout thing for anyone who watched that game and Bath getting a 5-point win, getting double the points of Toulouse, in Toulouse does not happen very often.
I think someone in Toulouse is going to lose their job. I'm not sure it's the coach because he's been there for, I think he's been there longer than I've been alive, actually.
Yeah. And we should celebrate the brilliant attacking play by the Bath three quarters, as you mentioned. George Ford and Kyle Eastman and Jonathan Joseph putting their hands up and saying, Stuart, put us in against Wales.
I think this now shows you why you don't play Burgess in the centres. Because all that great rugby, when Burgess plays in centres, they just look stale because he doesn't have the skills of Eastmond or Jonathan Joseph. And Jonathan Joseph could have scored one of the greatest tries of all time.
It was an amazing try.
It was incredible.
The one that Francois Lowe ended up scoring.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Big Francois Lowe.
That was...
He is a magnificent specimen.
Brilliant try.
A big old boy.
So that's a great game. And that's kind of opened up that pool as well.
Toulouse are still top just.
Yeah, because they were undefeated up until then. They'd won 4 from 4, but they have not got a single bonus point. So they're on 16 points. Bath, having lost the first two games, have now won 3 from 3. They're on 15 points. And Glasgow, after beating Montpellier, but failing to get the bonus point, they had DTH van der Merwe, who scored a hat-trick, but they didn't get the fourth try. They're on 14 points.
DTH van der Merwe sounds like a delivery company.
So that is the pool that you're going to have your eyes on. Without a doubt, and congratulations to Bath. And like I say, a lot of the guys in that Bath side are going to come up in discussion when it comes to the England squad, because we will be talking about the Six Nations selections, which are going to be happening very, very soon. For some nations, it's fairly routine. For England, anything but. So we'll get into that very soon. We've got to talk Quinn's Wasps as well.
Oh no, we've got to talk Wasps. Quinn's weren't even there.
No, and more than that, we've got to talk Captain Bantos.
Bantos!
Yeah, the Archbishop of Banterbury.
Another guy...
James Haskell, FYI, if you weren't sure.
I have been banging the Haskell drum for quite some time now. He is awesome. Oh, he's so strong.
Jay wouldn't just like to be banging the Haskell drum. He'd like to be banging
the Haskell... Where's this going? Every week, where's this going?
He'd like to be banging the Haskell drum after pitching a tent up a mountain after some fishing to catch their dinner on an open fire.
Oh, dear, Tim.
Sorry, I've got some food on your shirt there, James. Why don't you take it off? There you go. Sit topless in front of me and let me admire your incredible physique.
Why don't we drink Haskell-branded coffee?
Yes.
Mm. And lift Haskell-branded weights?
Well, just lift rocks in the wilderness. Is what you want to do with Haskell?
Haskell-branded rocks from his, from his now-out rock workout DVD.
If he hasn't done it already, it will be out soon. He had an incredible game. How many tackles was that?
Well, it was 200 something tackles for Wasps.
I think it was 26 for James Haskell. So not...
Fact!
Was it? Not quite Berger-esque, but it's a lot of tackles, yeah.
The thing is that he's so strong as well. All that back three are so strong. They're good ball carriers. And they just beat you up. I mean, I'm not telling anyone anything new here, but big, fast, good, skillful back rows all the way forward.
Wow, I think he's onto something.
Yeah.
Why haven't you got a job in selection for a Premiership outfit with that kind of in-depth analysis?
But why not get him back into the England team?
Well, he will be there or thereabouts. Whether he's...
No, he'll be there or thereabouts, but he will be on the bench. He will not oust Chris Robshaw.
I mean, there's a lot of noise now about Nick Easter. He had one or two nice runs, and you know, good for him. But... him and Robshaw, I'm going to be like, you know, the form back rows. Robshaw was anonymous.
It won't happen, but...
But why? Why?
But Harlequins had like 80% possession and 80% territory and just failed to convert it. So besides the humongous defensive shift that Haskell put in, did he offer anything? His carrying wasn't anything special. He doesn't have the link play skills that Robshaw has.
What? Do you think Robshaw has good link play skills?
Yeah, I think he does.
I'm not sure about that. I don't think there's much of a... I think what you get with Robshaw is a hard worker. You get kind of an English Dan Lydiot. Well, without the tackling.
His hands are good. Link play and the offloading game.
Tom Wood's excellent, but there could potentially be an argument for Robshaw to play six.
Yeah,
or Haskell to play six.
It's almost like Haskell and Wood.
I like Haskell more as a seven. I do think he's a really good seven.
There's six games, let's not forget, over the Six Nations. So, Stuart, these are decisions Stuart Lancaster makes. The whole point of the Six Nations is making sure by the end of it, and we said this a year ago, by the end of the Autumn Internationals, you need to know your team. He hasn't got there. So by the end of the Six Nations, you have to know your team.
Yeah, well, I'll just say this about Stuart Lancaster. I know everyone loves him because he's all about reading management books. But I can only imagine how good England would be if Warren Gatland was in charge. A discussion for another day.
Or,
but trust me,
Joe Schmidt.
Yeah. If Warren Gatland was in charge of England, there'd be world beaters.
The move to Coventry could not have gone any better for Wasps. The rugby they're playing, the product they're putting out on the field, the results they're managing to get, the crowds they're getting, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and also so phenomenal that Leicester have started advertising outside the stadium.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
What?
Yeah. What? You didn't know this?
I didn't know this.
They put Leicester put a big billboard advert up right outside the Ricoh Arena last week that said Leicester Tigers on your doorstep since 1880, like advertising to the people of Coventry that they were, well, they are still their local club.
That, if anything, that's just going to, I quite like that from Leicester. That's quite cheeky.
Yeah, but do you think like...
But it's only going to galvanise, I think, people towards Wasps a little bit more, I think.
But do you think that there's going to be a couple going towards, going to watch a game at the Rico and they see the sign and they go, honey, spin it round.
Yeah.
We're going to Leicester.
Yeah.
Wasps now have a great opportunity because they play Leinster at home.
Oh, by the way, I hope Wasps win this so much. Because if they do, my prediction of no Pro 12 teams going through to the knockout stages becomes true, effectively. Unless Leinster get a second runners-up.
Well, you could not have imagined that.
Well, yeah. Everyone says the Pro 12 is a better competition now because they have to play each other, which is very novel for them. It hasn't made it a better competition yet, but it has shown how weak the league is. Because now it's a level footing. They're not doing so well. In fact, they're doing pretty awfully.
Mm. I do think you will... Like, this is obviously a transition year, so it's the first time they've had to do this. So there will be a couple of years where they realise they have to strengthen the squads and they have to bring more people in to have that kind of depth.
Because they can't have a three-week break before these matches.
Yeah.
They would have done in the past.
Which they normally would have done. They would have been resting people for the previous game.
Warm weather training in Dubai, that kind of stuff.
So no. I think you will see in a couple of years' time... Certainly, the next few years, the Irish teams will be. Right
I'd be
back
worried
up
for the Irish national team. I know they had a great result or two in the Autumn Internationals, but I would be looking at that if I was Joe Schmidt or an Ireland fan and being genuinely a bit concerned that more injuries than there normally is.
Yeah.
The teams aren't playing as well because they're more tired and there's more demanded of them. And this is in a World Cup year. I have just realised I have thought of another name for Phil's quiz.
Right, let's just do the quiz now because he's catching up.
Okay.
I'm feeling much... I'll tell you what, I was really bricking it when Phil first said it. I had a mental blank, but I think I'm doing all right now.
Right, let's just do it now. Come on.
Right. Okay.
So recap the question, Phil.
So the question is, in the calendar year 2014, there were five people who played in the Viva Premiership who had won a World Cup.
Right, so we're only allowed to write down five names.
Only five names. I can see that JB has five names. Mm-hmm. And Tim, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, also has five names.
And there's
a few names in common there as well.
I was scratching my head.
I was winning comfortably.
Well, let's see.
Well, you think, because you don't know how many of yours are correct, Jay.
Well, all of them.
Okay.
Well,
so shall we start in chronological order? So shall we go back to the 99 World Cups?
Is there anyone playing in the 99 World Cup?
99?
There was not anyone playing in the 99 World Cup. So the 2003 World Cup.
Yeah, I have one.
Mike Tyndall.
Mike Tyndall is correct.
Yes.
1 point each. Okay, 2007.
2007, I have got Francois Lowe.
I have also got Francois Lowe.
Francois Lowe is incorrect.
Oh!
Ernst Joubert.
Is he on your list?
Yes.
Ernst Joubert has never won a cap for South Africa.
Oh.
He's actually now English qualified because he's lived in England
long enough. I thought I nailed that.
Oh my God, I could have turned this around.
So it's one point each. 2007.
Yeah.
There's no one.
Really?
Yeah. Not a single one.
Fact.
There was almost someone because CJ van der Linde signed... For London Irish.
He never played a game.
He played one
20
game
minutes, 20 minutes
against Scarlets in the LV Cup.
Ah.
He'd never played a game in the Aviva Premiership.
Right.
Well done.
So, that means there's four from 2011.
Is there really?
Oh, I've got three names down from 2011.
Oh, Christ, I've only got two.
Oh, dear, you wasted it, Joubert.
So, first one, Jay.
Piri Whippu.
Is correct.
That was one of the ones I only just... That was one of the last ones I remembered.
So that's two all. Next one, Tim.
Brad Thorne
is correct.
I don't know if this last one is one or not.
So, Jay, is that all of yours? That's everyone on your list?
It is.
So it's 3 points for Jonathan.
So basically, we're three all at the minute. And it's if
and you've got one more, Tim.
And it's if this last name is on the list or not. So... I'm hoping that in the New Zealand squad in 2011, probably didn't play and start, but I'm hoping John Afoa was in the squad.
Oh! No!
I can tell you that John Afoa was in the squad.
He's
correct.
Yes! Yes!
JV was so confident early on.
John Afoa. Do you know, we should have played this straight away.
Phil, who was the name we missed?
Oh, you missed New Zealand scrum half Jimmy Cowan.
Oh.
Who played for Gloucester up until the end of last season.
Where's he now, Jimmy Cowan?
I think he's gone to Japan.
Sounds about right.
There was talk of him going to France, possibly. But yeah, he's not at Gloucester anymore. So it's three Gloucester players.
Mm. So there is. Mm. And they've done really well.
Yeah. Good 2014.
What a rubbish quiz.
You always hate the quiz.
Good question there, Phil. Good. Right, let's move on and talk about some of the other games that we spotted before we get into the debate about the Six Nations squad. Any other things that you stood out? I mean, we've talked about the games that I really cared about. We've talked about already the Bath Toulouse, Quins Wasps.
Leicester was good.
Leicester Scarlets.
Saracens Munster as well, obviously very important for the league.
Me and Phil went to watch Sale Clermont live in the flesh.
Oh, wow. And I need to bust out this music again. Phil.
Yes.
You were there. You could practically reach out and touch Jamie Cudmore.
Well, not practically.
He's still quite a long way away. Yeah. And I would have been very, very scared. He's massive in real life. Just makes everyone around him look tiny.
Less massive.
Yeah, and he's alongside that humongous Clermont pack, and he still stands out. But yeah, two of my favourite players, Jamie Cudmore and Wesley Fofana, both played, both got yellow cards. Not the best game to go and watch them because it was horrendous conditions.
I've not been to AJ Bell for a long time. It seemed to be a little better this time around.
It was all right. The atmosphere. I mean, whoever that that new match announcer is.
My word, was he good.
He was.
He just whipped the crowd up, kept us interested. Very informative as well.
Yeah, very informative.
Very informative. Whoever that match announcer is.
Piss off. If you haven't listened for a while, then you might not know that inexplicably, and I still to this day don't know the reason why, but I was deposed of my position as the match announcer at Sale Sharks. In favour of a guy who, he's a nice bloke. He's a nice guy. That's all I say about.
He wasn't as good as you, Tim. Don't worry.
He wasn't.
Don't worry.
He was nothing, Tim. No competition.
Yeah, right. Sale had the strangest half-time entertainment, which was five kicks in the air and you want to catch as many as you can out of five.
Catch the bomb.
Yeah.
It was like they found two able-bodied men and one guy who has no business playing sport whatsoever.
No business near a rugby field.
Yeah, I don't know where they got him from, the Northern Quarter or somewhere, drinking, you know, micro-brews. But,
that's like where all the hipsters and people go, where they drink out of jam jars and wear tweed and stroke their waxed moustaches.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know why he was there.
But it's interesting that they're... Star international player Luke McLean, who's on $200,000 a year, who doesn't appear to be injured, but hasn't played for weeks. That's all he's doing now, just putting up bombs for people at half time.
If he pulls a hamstring doing that, I'm pretty sure there's going to be absolute outrage, uproar. But you know what the prize was for winning such a prestigious competition as Catch the Ball? Four tickets to the LV Cup.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think Sale have very cleverly doubled the crowd for that game now.
By two people winning tickets?
There'll be eight people there.
It was a bit of an anticlimax, that game. Clermont didn't really try and play rugby, disappointingly, probably because of the conditions. Sale didn't either. There was one penalty try, one try, and a few kicks.
It's such a miserable stadium. I mean, they are doing their best, but it just feels so soulless and cold. And it feels like once they completed it, they went around removing any kind of aspect of the stadium which increased the atmosphere. Just everything about it is...
Including the match announcer.
Including the match announcer, too.
But Saracens Munster, which was the earlier kickoff on Saturday, was an awesome game.
Billy Vunipola, back and back. It was all about Billy Vunipola. That song is awesome, by the way. I love that.
Thanks, Tim.
Did you come up with it?
Yeah, I did. I was watching rugby. I thought, that's...
Because there is, just to let you know, it's a little chant that JB came up with, and if they're ever on the pitch at the same time, I hope Saracens fans get on board with this. We had a big influence, we managed to get Exeter Chiefs to have a big toot-toot horn to celebrate Thomas Waldron when he scores a try. And now we should start a new campaign to get that song being sung as one of the chants at Saracens, because it started off with there's the two Torre brothers.
Yeah,
Colo, 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 Torre, yeah, 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 yeah. And JB's version of that is with the Vunipolas. Billy, 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 Vunipola, Vunipola, Maca, 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 Vunipola. Billy, 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 Vunipola.
Hey, Vunipola.
I think that's a great song.
It's a good song, Jay.
Yeah, I invented that on my own.
Saracens fans, if you're listening, get it going. Get it started. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, and also, can I just say, from the Scarlets game, going back to kind of Scarlets, Miles Benjamin scored. Which means he's JB. On his way. He's on his way with Anthony Allen to the England squad.
Hear me now, believe me later,
he's
JB
inching
says.
His way closer.
Well, maybe we'll get into the England squad in a little bit.
The Leicester bench was so powerful when it came on.
Yeah.
And Scarlets are weak. Scarlets are so weak. Jordan Williams, he played because Liam Williams pulled out just before the...
pulled off Jordan Williams.
Yeah, something like that.
No. After that, he just wanted to lie down and have a cigarette.
All I'm going to say is Newcastle Falcons or Saracens should go and sign Jordan Williams because he needs a nice artificial pitch for him to be any good.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
That would be good. I mean, Northampton Ospreys is going at the minute, so we can't really discuss that one at any great length.
The Saracens Munster.
Oh, yeah, we should mention that. We should mention that. Firstly, the reason we were talking about the song is because Billy Vunipola had a big game.
Yeah, carrying everything, but running over people and then, like, perfect timing for the offloads, for the support coming through. The last two games I've seen him play, he has been awesome. Just really, really good. When Saracens have both him and Mako, it does mean that they've got more ball carriers.
Yeah.
And it kind of allows Billy to almost rest to allow him to do more, because otherwise he's doing all of the carrying.
He does this for England as well, though. England rely on Vunipola so much when he plays that eventually he just gets worn out. And people accuse him of being lazy. He works incredibly hard.
He does. He really does. But that group is now really nicely set up. So Claremont topped the group on 18 points.
Mm-hmm.
Saracens, 17. And then Munster and Sale, 10 and 2, respectively. So they're out. But Saracens... travel to Claremont this coming weekend for what is basically the group decider.
Oh, wow.
In Claremont, where they never lose, but Saracens have got the beating of them the last
two
times.
They've been there before.
Yeah, so that is going to be a hell of a game this weekend coming up.
Now, one thing we haven't talked about that we really, really must, and I can't believe I've forgotten, but it's something which got a reaction out of us all through the weekend. Johan Hooge.
Oh, God.
You are a devilishly handsome man.
Is he? He's a very French-looking man.
Very, very, very... One of the most French-looking men imaginable. You are a disgrace, Johan Hooge. That dive you did against Bath when Horacio Agüero just put his hand on your chin and you dived holding your face like a footballer. You're an absolute disgrace. I can't wait to see if anything is done. I hope retrospective action is taken and a massive example is made of him, because... the reaction that it got in JB's living room as we were all sat there watching the game before we came out to do this podcast, JB said, he said what we were all thinking, "The game I love is being destroyed," is what JB said. And that sounds like it's an exaggeration, but you...
No, it's not.
Nail
it's
on the head.
Do you know who used to deal with it? Pride. Pride used to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't go down, you'd go down swinging. But not anymore.
Richard Hibbard did it and got the mickey ripped out of him on BT Sport Rugby Tonight. They asked him about it and he said he's embarrassed. And I bet he doesn't do it again. You're right. Just shaming. It's like we need to, in rugby terms and on TV, we need to stick Johan Hooge in the stocks and throw rotten fruit at him.
Can you imagine someone like Richard Hill or Lawrence Delalio or Dean Richards or Scott Quinnell or anyone diving?
No,
because it used to be a game for real men before we started trying to appeal to mothers. It's ridiculous. Just let them scrap. You'll never see it again. Tell you where it doesn't happen. Rugby league. Rugby league players never dive. Well, it's still played by real men. Sorry, Phil. Where's this going? It's dangerous enough.
No,
that's where it's going, isn't it?
I think it's absolutely disgraceful, the diving. It's a joke.
You don't judge the whole sport on the basis of a couple of absolute numpties, of which Johan Hooge is clearly one. And anyone that loves the game of rugby must have lost a massive amount of respect for him and his personal pride and his integrity.
Didn't Richard Cockerell promote this kind of behaviour?
Yeah, and then
after the Gibson incident.
He did say, well, if that's the way it's going to go, it's kind of encouraging people to go down, isn't it?
So he kind of nailed it.
The context of the game at the time, Toulouse were 7 points down in a game. It was massively important. It's potentially one of those things where winning is everything. Over and above personal pride, integrity, honesty, decency, and the history of the game. And
before you know it, we're going to have this awful situation you have in football, where all the talking heads get around and go, oh, well, he raised his hands, you can't raise your hands. I can't bear it. It's a sport for men, so they should be allowed to hit each other.
Listen, we've got plenty more to talk about. A little bit of build-up towards the big matches this weekend, and we've got a hipster 15 on the way, which I cannot wait to get into.
Actually, it's a socially pigeonholed 15.
Right, OK. But let's talk about the Six Nations squad, which is being selected, and the Saxon squad, which is being selected this week by Stuart Lancaster and his coaching team. They're going to pick the elite performance squad. They're going to pick the squad for the Six Nations. They're going to pick the Saxon squad. Now, we mentioned Wales and Ireland and a couple of the contentious positions they've got last week, one of the main ones being 10 for them. And 10 would be one of the contentious positions for England. So can we see if between the three of us, we can come up with some consensus over some of the contentious decisions that Stuart Lancaster has to face?
We can absolutely try, Tim.
Where would we start, Phil?
Captain. Genuinely, captain. The guy who's captain shouldn't be captain.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I think I disagree as well. Let's rattle through some of the positions which are most up for debate. Hooker first up.
Okay, so Dylan Hartley, incumbent, really good in the autumn internationals. His set piece is excellent, but he's currently serving a 3-match ban for elbowing whoever it was, Matt Smith, in the head.
Yeah,
which is
like a man
about his fourth or fifth long-term ban in as many years. So, is there a call to say he's too much of a liability for England? Because if you lose a man, he got simmed after 15 minutes against Leicester in a big game. If you lose one after 15 minutes at international level, you are more than likely going to lose that match.
My ranking of the hookers would be Hartley 1, and then actually a shootout, Webber Youngs, and I'd put on the fringe there, if there were an injury or a drop in form, David Pace.
Tell you what,
that would be my hooking.
The nice thing is about
my hooking assessment
about these hookers, right, is they're all different. So Hartley is excellent at the set piece. I mean, that to me is enough to put him in. But Youngs, if you saw him against Scarlets on Friday, two very good tries, two very good good carries. He runs very hard. He's got good skills. And Webber's a bigger-bodied guy, probably a bigger carrier than both. And I'd say he probably has better set-piece skills than Youngs. I do think, though, Hartley is easily number one.
Have we got a consensus there, Phil?
I would also agree with that, yes.
Right, cool.
And I would just add into that the fact that Laws is captain in the line-out, running the line-out, so having Northampton is another bonus. So, yeah, I would say Hartley deserves to keep his place, but he should be on thin ice. And if he does something like this again, when does it become that he's too much of a liability?
Ben Morgan out of the Six Nations. So we touched on it last week. So we should be able to be quite quick on this one. There's been lots of people saying Lawrence Dallaglio being one of them. Ian McGee can be in another, saying Nick Easter is the man to come back in and steady the ship. Other people have been saying Stefan Armitage. Other people have been saying and let James Haskell be the backup number eight.
Whoever said that is clearly a moron. An absolute moron. As we discussed last week, Haskell hasn't played eight for years.
Yeah.
Right.
Or Ewers.
Waldrum. Waldrum should be in the squad. Armitage should be in the squad. And there's an argument he should be on the bench. But you could do a lot worse than having Haskell as your back row cover.
So are you right? Are you saying you wouldn't involve Easter?
I would not involve Easter.
When we have these exciting discussions about who we'd pick, and we're all getting all creative and really, really getting animated about certain picks, no one ever goes, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could just play Robshaw? Not one of you. And you do it all the time, but yet you still defend your pick of Robshaw.
No, I
think it's ludicrous.
No, I don't defend the pick of Robshaw. I think before the autumn internationals, I was going, I want a proper seven. I don't think now is the right time. We're less than a year away from a World Cup. 9 months from the start of the World Cup against Wales, and
they have a proper seven. Have you heard?
They do have a proper seven. I heard that.
You've got two of them.
I did hear that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's anything to be gained by talking about that. So this number eight, are you saying it is Haskell and just another comes in, or are you saying it's Waldrum?
I don't think I ever said Haskell, did we?
Billy Vunipola, number eight.
Yeah, he's the number
definitely.
Eight.
Definitely.
And then Waldrum comes in where Morgan's gone out.
Waldrum's in the squad.
Or Ewers.
And Haskell is possibly on the bench and can cover number
eight. But we'd all,
if
pick, we'd all pick Armitage if Stuart Lancaster would allow himself to pick
Armitage.
Such
a moron, yeah.
I'd like to see him in the squad, yes.
So Armitage would be our top pick, then Waldrum. Fine.
Yeah.
I'll go with that. I'm happy to string along. Fly half then. George Ford looked really in control. I love how he jinks and takes it up to the line and then unleashed Jonathan Joseph on that outside break.
He's electric, isn't he?
Yeah.
Absolutely electric.
So would you start George Ford?
Yep.
Yes. I would like to just say that Owen Farrell played really, really well, controlled the game really well, kicked really well, distribution excellent against Munster.
Yeah.
But I would still go for
do you know,
George Ford.
Is there more controversy over the England team because, A, they're not very good, or, B, because they've got so many good players?
Yeah, I think that's it. You look at the Wales team; it almost picks itself for anyone's fit.
So we'd all start George Ford collectively. We'd
Correct.
Go with that, and we'd all have Cipriani in the Saxons and probably going off to Toulon in the summer.
Yeah. I'd say so.
Mm-hmm. Centres, is it Eastman Joseph now?
Has to be.
We've seen them play like that for Bath.
I think they've made a very strong argument that they should start against Wales, which could be concerning when you've got Jamie Roberts and Jonathan Davis and George North. All running,
but I tell you,
lines down that midfield.
It only takes a half break from those two. Only the smallest amount of space, and actually not those two, those three can cut you to pieces. Now, Toulouse are a big team, and that's exactly what they did.
Obviously, this is because Tuilagi is injured.
Yes, but, still not played.
But let's assume everybody was fit. Stuart Lancaster still doesn't appear to have a clue. Who is 2R? Who would your 2 be, Jay?
Sometimes chemistry is just as important as natural ability. There again, if you get those three excellent playmakers and put them in Stuart Lancaster's system, all they do is that one move out the back. So who knows?
I'd probably go for Ford, Eastman, mm-hmm. Who interestingly has 10% higher tackle success than either Burrell or Twelteries.
Wow.
With, I think he's 84 and those two are 72 and 74.
Hang on. So, are you telling me that Burrell misses a quarter of all his tackles?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, same with Twelteries. So, Eastman, who does sometimes get criticised defensively, his tackle success is greater than those two bigger players.
Fact.
And Tuilagi, I would probably go assuming he's fit and
same.
Doing what he
and
has
and in
the
absence
in the
of Tuilagi, do you just replace one muscular, big, ball line carrying centre in Tuilagi for Burrell?
There's definitely an argument for that.
Burrell's a great player, by the way.
I'd also would like to see Jonathan Joseph get a chance for England because he just played so well this season.
We're all going Ford Eastman and then
JJ.
JJ at the moment.
Because you know you've got Tuilagi, I think that's the perfect reason to play Jonathan Joseph. Because if everybody was fit, we would go with, I mean, JB might not, but Phil and I, so two out of the three of us, and if that's representative, more people than not would go Tuilagi outside Eastman, perhaps. So let's try something different. Let's try Jonathan Joseph, because he's the different style.
Yeah. I would be really annoyed if Brad Barrett plays a lot of games in the Six Nations because we've seen everything we need to see of Brad Barrett. He is a solid player, and if you put him in the World Cup, he will do a good job. But we don't need to see any more because we know exactly what his strengths and limitations already are.
And I suppose the wings is still a contentious position for England.
Like, I think Johnny May's in. Here's who I'm playing. I'm going to play Jordan Wade. That's if I'm picking the team tomorrow because I think they're exciting. And then, who's the fullback? Watson, why not? Pace. In the pack, power, and in the backs, just pace.
I would have Mike Brown at fullback.
Mike Brown at fullback.
Why? He's not playing particularly well.
I think he is still
playing. I disagree.
Did you see Quinn's, who did he play the other week?
Leicester, was it?
Leicester, when they comfortably beat Leicester four tries.
And Mike Brown was imperious at the back again.
Yeah. Would you have Johnny May, Tim?
I think I probably would. I don't think Anthony Watson would be my first choice wing. I'd love to see Christian Wade in the full England squad. I understand his defensive limitations.
He can turn that around real quick.
But he does still struggle with his positioning a bit. And
let's see what our friend thinks.
So, you know, I just sort of decided, well, if I'm going to get scorned either way, I just might as well have a bit of crack.
Yeah, I'm with him. I agree. Who would you go on the wings, Phil? You were a former winger.
Me. Such a dangerous broken field runner. I'd also have Noel. I do, actually. I didn't like him initially. And I hate his stupid hair and facial hair.
His hair offends me.
Yeah, it does me as
and
well.
And Luke Cowan-Dickey.
Mullet-Dickey, you mean. Mullet-Dickey. Yeah, both of them winds me up. But I think Noel is a really, really talented player. And the more he's in and around the England squad, the better.
I wasn't sure what offended me more, Johan Huge's dive or Luke Mullet-Dickey's hair.
Hair. Horrible, horrible hair.
Which it kind of leads us neatly on, actually, to the next part of the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. And I would like your suggestions, please, for a hipster 15. Now, I think it's important to define what we mean. We're going to pick a 15, 1 to 15 players who would fit a hipster 15. But a hipster nowadays kind of just means someone who's got a beard.
No, hang on.
Originally, a hipster meant guys that would be deliberately counterculture, go shopping in vintage shops for old Adidas tracksuit tops that they would then wear to have their breakfast, take their picture of breakfast on Instagram and drink their smoothie out of a jam jar.
Yeah.
Whilst talking about Nietzsche.
Yeah.
Right, it's okay. See, I think we should go a different way with this. I think it should be socially pigeonholed people, because I think there's a very grey area of when hipsters become, you know, Holly Davidson bikers or Chav Peacocks. And the reason is because we're all wearing rugby kits, so we don't really know. And Phil brought this up. James Scaysbrook from Bath. When he was getting...
Bath and Exeter played a bit, yeah.
So when he was getting his Hard Man Stars tattooed to his elbow, was he aware that a few months later that people would be in the Northern Quarter or some, you know...
Shoreditch in London, all the trendy parts of town with star tattoos on their elbows like Skate. Well, but the thing is, Scagebrook looks like an MMA fighter.
They all kind of do if you dress them up the same. It's the clothes that make the difference.
So what 15 are we picking then?
Stupid hair and tattoos, and then we'll socially categorise them as we go along.
All right, fine. So,
Joe Marler, hipster.
Joe Marler, Zangief from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
I think Joe Marler's a bit of a hipster.
So I think he is a bit of a hipster.
Is it hair tattoos?
Yeah.
Hair tattoos and beard 15.
Yeah.
And then we'll decide whether they're hipster or like
a hard man.
Hipster or hard man. That's good. I like it. Hipster or hard man. So, Joe Marler.
Well, Richard Hibbard.
Richard Hibbard.
I don't think anyone's accusing him of reading Nietzsche anytime soon.
No.
Yeah, he's more like a Valley scumbag, isn't he?
Harsh. Valley hardcase.
Yeah, Valley hardcase / scumbag / bikey.
Do you know what? Thank God rugby exists, because otherwise what would Richard Hibbard be doing?
God no.
Thank God he's got an outlet for whatever he does.
Yeah.
He's even got a lovely tattoo on his calf. So there you go.
It's the caps he wears with the flat peak and those... Phil, I asked what type of... Okay, so there's a type of trouser which some young men these days wear. I sound really old saying that's some young men. But there's a popular trouser cut that people wear. And I was describing it earlier. And I said, it's like really low crutch, but then it goes really tight in at the ankles. And it can either be jeans or it can be like tracksuit bottom material. And Phil knew what this was.
Unfortunately, I did respond to say, you mean a drop crotch carrot fit jeans, Tim?
This was a mystery to me. This is an absolute mystery.
Drop crotch carrot fit. Is that real?
They're awful. I only know them because they look...
Because you've got a pair.
Abhorrent.
I bet you've got a pair.
I categorically do not have a pair of them.
They are awful. If you have a pair of drop crotch carrot trousers... You may think you look good. You don't look good.
Oh, they're awful. They're almost as bad as the ponytail, the top ponytail with the shaved sides. That
I know someone who's got one of those. Who is going to be in my backline? Society's just disintegrating before our very eyes, isn't it?
Uge's diving. People are thinking those trousers look good.
Ugh, they are awful, aren't they?
Yeah, tight head.
The one guy I've got. Bruises his own beard. Quite a few tattoos.
Oh, I've got one as well.
Is Brian Mugiati.
Oh, nice. Oh, okay. That's a proper hipster.
If he genuinely brews his own beers and he's good at it, I don't think he should be classed as a hipster. Because hipsters are useless at everything. They just pretend to be good at stuff. They just pretend to have opinions. They don't understand the opinions. They just pretend to have them.
No, I think brewing beers is exactly the sort of thing a hipster would do.
No, that's kind of what's...
Their own craft ale.
Yeah.
No, I think they drink other people's craft ale and pretend to like it whilst grimacing.
I will go with majority hipster in the front row. Second row is there.
Damien Welsh? Is it Damien Welsh?
Dom Day.
No, hold on, who am I thinking about?
High and tight
Are you
hair.
Thinking of Ryan Caldwell of Exeter?
Oh, yes!
So where did I get Damien Welsh? Who's Damien Welsh?
Exeter, second row.
Sorry, yeah, Ryan Caldwell.
Ryan Caldwell.
Who is Banahan Mark II.
Yeah.
That's the only reason he had to leave Bath was just because they could not cope with... it was getting too competitive between Banahan and Caldwell.
Yeah, and also they only had one tattoo artist in Bath, so...
There's only so many hours in a day.
Exactly. They had to fight for space. Magnus Lund's brother.
Yeah, well, Eric Lund.
Done. Proper hipster, that. Back row, then. Let's start rattling through these a little bit.
Yeah. There's James Scaisbrook, who...
Damn right he's in there. He has to be in there.
He's got the bald head, he's got the tattoos, but he's more of a hard man than a hipster.
If you just threw him in some drop crotch carrot fits, or whatever they are, he would fit in perfectly.
Yeah, no one would bat an eyelid at him walking around Shoreditch.
Exactly. How devastated you must be if you're in a biker gang and now everyone's dressed like you. Or if you're a lumberjack. You'd have to carry your axe so everyone knows that you are a lumberjack and not a hipster.
Sebastian Chabal has to go in.
No, because he's genuinely deep and introverted, same as Sheridan.
No, Chabal would go shopping in a vintage shop, I reckon, and find...
He definitely would,
He wouldn't care what anyone thought, and he'd love it.
Yeah, but hipsters do care what people think.
And he would read Nietzsche. He's a deep thinker, yeah. Chabal.
He's like a proper original hipster. Yeah, not these pretenders we have nowadays.
Right, Sebastian Chabal can go in. On proviso that we all appreciate, hipsters want to be like him. He isn't one, but hipsters want to be like him.
Oh, he's
a trendsetter.
Yeah, he's a trendsetter. That's exactly it.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
And can I go back to second row and say Jim Hamilton? Tatted up.
Yeah. Well done,
Big
Tim.
Big beard. Yeah.
But he falls more on the hard man side than the hipster side.
Exactly. He goes, wears his socks down by his ankles, doesn't care. Whatever.
He's not interested.
No.
There must be loads of them.
By the way, props. Would Adam Jones get in with that hair?
No.
Scrum off.
I've got Francois Hugard, South African.
Yes.
Scrum off, covered in tattoos. If you've ever seen his Twitter and Instagram account, there's always pictures of him with a strong filter on it. So it's an alternative colour.
Very chrome filter.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
That's disturbing. How about we partner him up with Quade Cooper?
Quade Cooper could go on there.
Or Danny Cipriani.
Cipriani.
Sippers!
Tom Catterick, the Newcastle.
Yeah. Tom Catterick is in. He is in. High and tight.
Yeah.
Actually, high and tight. Danny Kerr!
Yeah. The high and tight haircut. Danny Kerr started all that.
He invented high and tight, Danny Kerr. Danny Kerr's in.
Absolutely.
Hugard's out. Danny Kerr in.
Danny Kerr in. High and tight. How many rugby players have high and tight haircuts now because of Danny Kerr?
Just by the way, the ultimate anti-hipster has to be Brad Barrett, right?
Yeah, I'll go along with that.
Yeah, because
he's had the same haircut since he was 12.
Yeah,
short back and say Brad Barrett or Jamie Cudmore, they're like ultimate jocks, aren't they? Like the strong jawline, the short back and side.
Totally.
God, why are they doing this to themselves? Anyway, let's get a 12 because I've got a 13.
Okay, I've got a 12. Somebody can play 12. Ryan Crotty, the beard. He has a high and tight haircut.
Oh yeah, well done you.
He'd fit well in there.
I think Gordon Darcy would have to be suggested. Again, maybe he's more of a Game of Thrones 15 member with that beard.
Yeah.
Well, I would put Banahan at 13 because there's such rich pickings now.
In the back three.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few, isn't there?
Banahan's captain as well.
With his Banahan light, Ryan Caldwell as vice-captain.
Banahan's so hipster, he's even got disciples.
Okay, back three.
Noel?
Yes, I'll go with Noel. Hugo Monnier.
Oh, yes. See, now he is like, I don't know, Hugo Monnier, I would say...
Fashionista 15.
Yeah, surely. Fashionista. He's like, it's like he's auditioning to try and be Bond, the next James Bond in the franchise.
That's just not a bad shout.
Turned out impeccably every single time. I can't remember the last time he wore socks when he wasn't on a rugby pitch.
Oh, wow. Actually, Why do we persevere with long socks on a rugby pitch? Is there any actual reason why we do that?
Because they just look right.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're playing sevens.
People with socks around the ankles. Yeah, sevens, socks around the ankles.
And the really good players have their socks around the ankles.
I'm not buying that.
Oh, Chris Latham?
This is a discussion for another day.
Definitely, definitely.
An ankle yeah, socks 15.
Actually, if someone knows of the reason why we wear rugby socks, please let me know, because I want to know.
Anyway, so back three, Noel, Monya and James O'Connor?
Yes.
Ooh, yeah, good one.
Yeah, he's got the high and tight haircut.
If he could grow a beard, he would do. He occasionally has like a bit of bum fluff.
He's trying at least.
Yeah.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed that. If we've missed anyone, obvious.
Did you?
Well, that was good.
Think of a hipster coach as well.
Michael Chica from his...
Oh, so, yes, his horn-rimmed glasses. I'm imagining with those glasses, he didn't need a prescription at all. He was just wearing them just because they look good.
Just to look cool.
There we go, Michael Checker.
Oh, so right. So true. Right, so at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. There's loads of rugby to look forward to, and I guess we better preview some of that. But much like last week when we only previewed the games that kind of really mattered and had something on them, I think we should do the same this week. And there's less games that really matter, but the ones that do are...
Really matter.
Really matter. Mm. And we've already kind of touched upon some of them. So... the two big matchups, Claremont Saracens. Wow.
Yes.
In Claremont, where, as you say, Phil, they don't lose.
Yeah.
Saracens have got something over Claremont after Jacques Berger single-handedly defeated them last year.
Yeah. It's the thing of beauty, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's when he had his hair, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Samson.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Not quite the same. So how do you see that one going down? I mean, you'd have to just say Claremont at home, surely.
I think KPMG are going to supply Saracens with the data needed to defeat Claremont, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, Claremont were not impressive against Sale.
They were when they wanted to be, though, weren't they?
Well,
They did step up
the tempo at times. But they did enough to get over the line and get the win, and they're still top of the group, and they're at home. So that all says Claremont will do enough again. But
it is scientifically proven, isn't it, that Sale aren't Saracens?
Well, that...
True.
Hold on a minute. That is...
Fact.
That is a fact. Yeah. Sale aren't Saracens.
That is exactly
hold
what
on,
I'm
hold
saying.
Hold on, no, I think we got that wrong. No, we're right. Sale aren't Saracens. Yeah.
So, watch his space. I'm not... Watch his space.
Sounds vaguely threatening.
It is. I think Saracens will win.
All right, I'm going to go for Clermont. I'm going to go for both of them to get through to the knockout stages.
I will also go with that, Tim. A very close game. Both go through to the knockout stages.
So, pool two.
Yes, Leinster versus Wasps.
Leinster travelling to Wasps.
Yeah.
And the winner of this will basically finish top.
Yeah.
Yes.
You better hope if you... support the Pro 12 and listen to this podcast, you better hope Leinster win, because if they don't, this is going to go on and on and on. I'm never going to leave your league alone. It's a farce. It's a hobby league.
Potentially, there's 2 points Leinster are ahead. So if Wasps win, Leinster could still finish top by finishing within 7 points, losing bonus point and a try bonus point. But it's unlikely because their points difference is very close as well. So it's a showdown again in pool two. And how do you see this one going?
Wasps at home, assuming they've got everyone fit, which I think they should do, certainly the vast majority, I think Wasps could actually do it. Wasps could win and potentially even get a 4-try bonus point to categorically top the group.
Yeah, I think Wasps will win. I think they'll win comfortably.
But I do think that Leinster will have enough to get 1 or 2 bonus points and probably
it's
go through as well.
It's such a shame. Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing O'Brien's still out.
O'Brien, Keane Healy probably won't be playing as well, unless he might be his first game back.
But. See, it'd just be lovely to see Heaslip, O'Brien, whoever else that they choose, go up against that big Wasps back row.
Yeah, because if they put...
A back row off.
If they put O'Brien at 7 and this Jack Conan, who we've talked about a couple of times in the past, who's a very good 6/8 with Heaslip, that'd be two really tasty back rows.
We've all agreed that Sean O'Brien... can carry the ball through anyone. But there again, Haskell can tackle anyone. What happens?
I think I think this is one of those games when pedigree and experience of, effectively, this is a knockout match. And this is where I think the experience of Leinster will mean they know how to deal with this. Wasps haven't, for a lot of these guys, they've never been there. Wasps, one English team, you know, have been to the heights in Europe and whatnot. But I think Leinster are going to do it because they've got players who've been there, done it, know what it means.
I think Wasps are going to win. I do take what you say, though, and I think they are going to be in for a long afternoon, but I do think Wasps will win.
Yeah, I also think that Wasps might just have enough to do it. Yeah, Wasps at home for me, but Leinster also to go through. Leinster to get one of the runners-up spots.
If they don't, it will be hilarious. It will be hilarious.
In Pool 3, we have got... I mean,
Pool 3 is pretty much done.
Pretty... Well...
Why, who's in Pool 3?
Toulon will top
it's
the
Toulon going to Scarlets. Potential banana skin there.
I mean, they've got to play rugby, if that's what you mean.
Well, no, but they lost to Cardiff away. I mean, but I don't... But Scarlets got really nothing to play for beyond trying to take a scalp. And Leicester will go to Ulster. They're both tied on 13 points. Oh, no, no, sorry. That's without Toulon's win. Sorry, you're right. Actually, Pool 3, Toulon are going to go through.
Yes, definitely. Leicester have a mathematical chance of going through if they get a 5-point win, but it won't happen because other teams will amass more points. So Toulon to hammer Scarlets, Leicester, Ulster, dead rubber. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Pool 4 is tasty again. And Bath and Toulouse faced off. They're the two teams that could go through. Glasgow could also go through.
Yeah.
Really, really fascinating that. Now, Bath play Glasgow at the Rec.
Glasgow are going to receive a beating like they've never had before.
5 points for Bath.
Yeah. By the way, I'm a convert to Glasgow. I think they're good. But here's the other thing I think, is when you rely solely on a game plan which consists of two Fijian fellas showing up and creating magic, you've got a problem.
That is not their game plan.
That is their game plan.
They've got a good, solid pack. They've got good, strong runners. They've got exciting
Without those two Fijian lads, they don't go forward. No, they don't go forward.
I do disagree. I think Glasgow are a good team. I think Bath will get 5 points. Glasgow might get one or two. But Toulouse will also get 4 or 5 points because they're playing Montpellier, who are completely out. Mm. So Toulouse will probably...
Both will go through.
Yeah, Toulouse will top the group. Both. And Bath will be...
Will go through.
Will go through.
Yes, and in Pool 5, Northampton play Racing Metro in another shootout.
Yeah.
We would think. I mean... The shootout for top. Has have the games finished?
They have.
Have they? What was the
score? What are the results?
Have they finished?
I deliberately left that one till last because the games have still been going on as we've been recording the podcast.
Sorry, they haven't finished.
Must have just finished.
Oh, have they just? Ospreys 9, Northampton 20, I've got. And Racing Metro 53.
So they got a maximum.
Treviso 7.
Which leaves the table... Northampton didn't get the 5 points.
Yeah.
Leaves them tied on points, 19 apiece. Both teams are going through.
Yes.
So,
fact.
Can you predict roughly who's going through then? Like, breakdown of nations?
Yeah. So, I think. So, who do you think will win at Northampton, Franklin's Gardens against Racing Metro?
I think Racing Metro might get an absolute hiding, quite frankly.
I think Northampton will win and go through.
I think Northampton will win and go through top.
So our five group winners that we're predicting are going through are Claremont, although JB said Saracens.
Saracens for me, yeah.
Claremont, yes.
You've gone Wasps, although I've said Leinster.
Yeah, Wasps.
Toulon. We're all in agreement.
Definitely.
It could be Bath or Toulouse. It comes down to bonus points.
It's in Toulouse's hands if they get a 5-point win against Montpellier, who is dead rubber.
We'll go Toulouse.
Yeah,
we'll go Toulouse and Northampton.
Northampton.
So our five pool winners: Northampton, Toulouse, Toulon, Wasps, Clermont, and our three.
Yeah, this is where it gets
second
tricky.
Second place is where it gets really tricky. Now you would have to favour Racing because they have the points in the bank.
Yeah,
on 19 being one of them, Bath because they will beat Glasgow and will have at least 19, possibly 20 points. Will go through as another of them. We're basically saying
Leinster or Saracens, then.
Leinster or Saracens. And you'd have to favour with points in the bank Leinster.
Yeah. I'd go with that. Unfortunately, it looks like Saracens might be going out unless they cause a big upset against Clermont.
Well, it's not going to be a big upset.
Let's put a team couple of quid in the pot for that one.
Oof.
An accumulator.
Oof.
For our quarter finalists.
Okay.
Oh, I bet we get some well good odds on that.
I'm going to put anyway. Later on. I'm pretty good at these things.
This guy is so good. It's so good.
And then straight into Six Nations.
Oh,
well,
wow.
One week break, I think.
Oh, is it 1 week break, is it?
Yeah,
there's the Saxons match. The Sam Burgess match, as it's been renamed.
Have you got any Six Nations tickets this year, Tim?
No.
Me and Phil have got at least one set. We're going to Wales, Scotland.
Great. Yeah. Cheers. Thanks for the brag. Appreciate it.
By the way, there was a game that happened last week which I wanted to mention at the top of the show, but I didn't. I'll mention it now. I don't know if you know, I support a team called RGC. Have you heard of them?
You are wearing an RGC
shirt. I'm actually wearing an RGC
shirt as we speak.
I can't believe I missed this out. But last week, RGC, the plucky North Walesians, went down to South Wales and beat the incumbent champions of South Wales, Neath, in the cup. So, well done, boys. Exceptional work.
I think there's only one person I think we should let have the final word. Thank you very much for listening. JB.
Goodbye, Tim.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you very much, the Frostbit Kid.
I sort of realised at a young age it didn't matter what I did, I was going to get a scowling. So, I just sort of decided, well, if I'm going to get scowled either way, I just might as well have a bit of crack.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.